Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. We have a great show in store for you today. So I would like to say hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South Americas. Jima and I are excited to be with you once again. So let's take a look at what's on tap today. We look at the latest on the brutal murder of Trayvon Martin. We look at Whitney Houston's official release, cause of death. Also, some staggering developments coming out of Virginia about a ninth grader, Jordan Shoemate, says that during class, a teacher asked him to read Blacker. And much, much more. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. For those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button, click the like button, or follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell. We want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Okay, before we get started, the Reverend Al Sharpton will be in South Alabama to speak at the funeral for his mother, Ada Sharpton, who passed away early Thursday morning in Dothan, Alabama. The visitation for Mrs. Sharpton will be on Monday, March 26th at Newville Center Baptist Church from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. The funeral will follow a wake at 11 a.m. on Tuesday. Now, Sharpton learned of his mother's death Thursday as he was headed to Florida, where he led a protest related to Trayvon Martin's case. He says, "My mother, Ada Sharpton, passed in the early hours of this morning. She was my all. I hope God will give her now peace. I love you, Mom." That's what he tweeted. Now, a spokesman for Sharpton said Ms. Sharpton passed away after a long battle with Alzheimer's disease and dementia. Of course, our prayers and thoughts go out to Reverend Sharpton and his family during this trying time. It's always difficult to lose a loved one. So, of course, we ask that you all do the same. Send Al Sharpton your love, your tweets of love, your Facebooks of love, to let him know that you are thinking about him, you're with him, because he stood by so many other people during their times of need, and now we need to stand by him in his time of need. I also want to talk about something that's not really covered that much, and I want to introduce it because I think it's something that's positive, and we could surely use something that's positive nowadays. And this is about Don Thompson. Don Thompson is now has been named the CEO of McDonald's Corporation. That's right. The main man. The HNIC, if I can use that. Donald Thompson has been named CEO of McDonald's Corporation. He's taken the helm of the world's largest fast food restaurant chain. Now, he will assume his new role on July 1st, succeeding retiring chief executive Jim Skinner. Now, of course, this is coming out of Black Enterprise, and the move places Thompson one of Black Enterprise's 100 most powerful executives in corporate America. In the exclusive club of African Americans running major publicly traded corporations, one that includes Ken and Chenault of American Express and Ursula Burns of Xerox Corporation. He says, "I'm humbled to take the baton as CEO of McDonald's. Our management team is strong and will remain focused on the plan to win and our three global priorities, optimizing the menu, modernizing the customer experience, and broadening our accessibility to even more customers." Again, our hats go off to you, Don Thompson, who has been named the CEO of McDonald's. I also want to talk a little bit about John Payton. Now, John Payton was the president and director counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund and Education Fund, has passed away. Now, NAACP president and CEO Benjamin Jellis has confirmed, this is according to The Root, that he was 65. Payton passed away suddenly on Thursday after at Johns Hopkins University Hospital in Baltimore after a brief illness, a spokesman for the Legal Defense Fund told The Root. Now, no further details were available. He leaves behind a wife, Gay McDougal. Now, Payton, the Legal Defense Fund's sixth president and director counsel, leaves a gaping hole in the fight for civil rights. He led the fund's involvement in five cases before the U.S. Supreme Court, according to his bio. And it reads, two of those cases in which Legal Defense Fund was either lead counsel or co-counsel produced critical victories in the areas of voting rights. And they quote Northwest Austin Municipal Utility District Number 1 versus Holder and Employment Discrimination Lewis versus the City of Chicago. It was not surprising then that given his record of involvement in civil rights cases before taking the Legal Defense Fund post, earlier this spring, the National Law Journal named John Payton one of the most influential civil rights attorneys at the last decade, and the Washington, D.C. Bar Association awarded him the Charles Hamilton Houston Medallion of Merit. This burst of activity by the country's first and finest civil rights law firm since its founding by Thurgood Marshall describes both its institutional mission and John Payton's lifelong personal commitment to be an advocate for justice, equality, and a true democracy for everyone. Again, that's John Payton of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund has passed away. And so, again, just like with Al Sharpton's mom passing away, our prayers, our thoughts go out to the family because we know how difficult this time can be. And for that gaping hole to be left, we hope that the NAACP can surely fill that gaping hole soon and at Godspeed. All right, let's talk Trayvon Martin. So, today, to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. We want you to speak out on this issue. There's a lot going on. There's been a lot of rallies going on, a lot of hoodies being worn. But what's your opinion about the situation? You know, I really want you to speak out on this issue. I want to know, what does this death mean to you? How has it changed your life? How has it changed your perspective on our judicial system? And so I want to talk about this in kind of a few different ways, because this is a large case. And so first I want to talk about the 1,000 people that prayed, shouted, and chanted during a downtown Jacksonville rally on Saturday, asking for criminal charges to be filed against the man who fatally shot Trayvon Martin. Now, after walking from the Jacksonville landing, the crowd gathered in the riverfront parking lot of the Duville County Courthouse. They were near the offices of State Attorney Angela Corey, whom the governor just assigned Thursday to investigate the killing as a special prosecutor. Now, they were looking at her, they said, and they expected her to do the right thing. Now, State Representative Mia Jones, a Democrat of Jacksonville, told the crowd that Jacksonville, that this was going to be a priority for them. So I want to know what you think about this case. And I want to play for you something that a conversation between Bill Maher and Charles and Blow, and I really want to get you to respond to this. So I want you to take and pay close attention to the conversation that took place. And it's in, I want you to view it in the context of the hoodies that's been portrayed or being worn or been used as a signal of affection, of acknowledgement for Trayvon. And so I want you to kind of listen at the conversation. I want to try to take the conversation in that direction here shortly. So again, this is Charles M. Blow having a conversation with Bill Maher from a YouTube video. Take a listen.
You know, when I heard this about the Stand Your Ground law, which is about how you're basically meaning anyone in Florida can shoot anybody else if they feel threatened. Okay. And I remember only a couple of months ago, remember when Jan Brewer, the governor of Arizona, stuck her finger in the president's face and said she felt threatened.
Right.
And I thought, what must a young black kid feel like if they're threatened, if the president of the United States can feel threatened on the tarmac of a public airport? What do I have to do to not be threatening?
Well, I mean, you bring up, this is a very interesting point and part of the column I wrote last week, which is about the burden that young black men feel in this country. And it is a very heavy weight on their shoulders all the time, because you cannot behave like all of the rest of your friends. You have to watch. I mean, it's almost exhausting.
Can't wear a hoodie.
Well, not only can you not wear a hoodie, but you literally are consciously paying attention to the way you move your body.
Right.
It is a physically exhausting exercise to know I can't run or make a sudden movement because now I see some cop standing on the corner and he's looking this way. Or I can't put my hands in my waistband, as George Zimmerman says that Trayvon Martin had his hands in his waistband, because that may signal that I have some sort of weapon. This kind of constant having to think about how you are positioning your body so that no one takes advantage of that and views you as suspicious and maybe takes your life or takes you to jail is exhausting.
What did you think about... I mean, you obviously wore a nice suit here tonight so that there wouldn't be any trouble.
I have a couple.
Because, you know, no one ever, you know, kills a black guy in a nice suit. Ask Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. But are you booing me for that? Like I shot them? No, but that's true, right? I mean, they got shot and they were wearing suits.
Yeah.
But what do you think about what Geraldo said?
So
the
conversation kind of took the direction of... I'm wearing a hoodie, and the fact that it could okay, as I was saying, it sounds like we had a little technical difficulty there when things kind of went awry. But for the most part, the conversation was taken in direction of a black man's demeanor, his, as Charles M. Blow, the burden of young black man. So I want to get you to weigh in on this. I want to get you to weigh in on the simple fact that there are many different emotions that are taking place now because of the Trayvon Martin case. Now, it's not like these issues have not taken place before. So what is it about Trayvon Martin's case that's making people really rise up and do something about it? So we're going to take a quick break, and after the break, I want you to weigh in on that particular question. What is it about this particular case that's making people now stand up and now be more actively involved in the brutal atrocities against African-American men? So again, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to take your calls. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGMA, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. In just a few minutes, we're going to open up the phone line. But before we do that, I would like to bring on the Chief Operating Officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting, also the Executive Producer of Current Events. And I introduce to some and present to others, Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
Absolutely wonderful. Now, Trayvon Martin. And now, of course, this is we talked about this last week. We kind of broke the 911 tapes. We kind of broke it down into different areas. We dissected, and now it seems like social media has really taken this topic to the next level. So my first question is to you, what does the depth of Trayvon mean to you? And then I'm going to follow it up with the fact that why is it now this is being more talked about more than in previous cases?
Well, I think when you look at the totality of it all in terms of, you know, what his death means to me, because I'm the parent of a young black child, and if in his short time he's been on earth at five, we're still having discussions about black people, black males being the boogeyman here in 2012, I can only imagine what they're going to be considered in his lifetime. And so what it means is that, you know, his death means to me is that we haven't come as far as we thought we had as a nation in our totality around race. I think we kind of, in the back of our minds, knew it, We wanted the election of President Obama to, it wasn't going to, I think the election of President Obama for black people was one thing and for white people was another. I think for, and this is just the world according to Jima, I think for white people it was, okay, the slate is now wiped clean and y'all can't talk about nothing we did before he was elected. It almost kind of like it didn't exist. If you look back over the last couple of years and all of the attempts to dismiss slavery, to marginalize the impact of it, to have presidential candidates running on saying civil rights didn't need to happen and that states should have just voted on these things. I mean, you have all these things coming out now that you've never heard before. And so that was, you know, their take on what the election was. And for us, it was more thinking from the world according to Jima. His election was more around the culmination of, you know, finally, you know, after all we've done for this country, we fought in every war, we've raised your children, we've nursed your children, we've been your mistress, we've been your slave, we've been, you know, your person that you've beaten to death, literally and figuratively. We've been all those things to you, and yet we're still here, and here's the proof that we're still here. And so for, you know, so I think about all of that when I think about the death of Trayvon Martin, because and when you can't just think about the death in an isolated event, because, you know, not to be callous, but young children, young black male children are dying every day. And so, you know, it can't just be that a young black child has died. And so you look at it in all of that. And for me, it's just that we have not come as far as we thought we had. And I never really thought we had anyway, but I just look at, because too many things still happen on a day-to-day basis. You still have too many stories. You have too many times I can walk in a store and based on what I have on or what I look like determines what type of service I receive. So, you know, and that happens today. So I already knew we hadn't come that far, but I think, you know, white America is now waking up to the fact that, you know, there's still much work to be done.
Okay. So why is it that Trayvon Martin's case is bringing this all to a head? I mean, we can't forget, you know, just 6 years ago, not even, Sean Bell, a 23-year-old black man, was killed by some policemen, allegedly, off duty. And they rained out like 50 shots. And he was unarmed, getting ready to go, I mean, coming from his bachelor party, getting ready to go to a wedding. So, I mean, what's different about Sean Bell's case as opposed to this Trayvon Martin case? Why is there more outrage for this than that?
Well, I think in its simplest form, it's because of the presence of law enforcement in one and the lack of law enforcement in another. So when you look at the Sean Bell and the fact that it was black and white officers that had a hand what happened on that dreadful night, and you look at the fact that for centuries, years, all from what we can remember and reread and watch movies, that the police have always gotten away with the murdering of black people. It was like the law for a while. It wasn't even against the law to do it. So there's no, you know, there's no outcry as much. I mean, not that there wasn't an outcry, because there was. But I think the difference is in who's the shooter. And so here you have a young man who was doing absolutely nothing in this particular community by this person who had no legal authority. And so as much as they try to paint us as being these unruly people, we respect the law. We don't have a problem with law enforcement. We don't have a problem with obeying the law. We have a problem when the law isn't equally and distributed. And so that's when we began to have an issue with what's happening. And so I think with this case, as it relates to Trayvon, it was just like Okay, this is the last one. I mean, you know how you have a child and they keep doing something and you're like, okay, now you do that one more time. And that one more time comes more than one more time. It's like probably 20 times later and then you finally say that's it. This could, I mean, and, you know, this is it. I mean, really, we're still dealing with this after all this time. And then the fact that there just seems to be so many things that were left undone. I think for me personally also, his life was so not valued at the end of the day. When his life was taken, there was no value placed on the fact that a young black male had been murdered. And the fact that as you hear more information, he laid in the morgue for 3 days before anyone knew who he was. When you hear they could have contacted the family because they had his cell phone, when you hear that Zimmerman was not tested for any sort of substances, but the young man that lay dead was, when you hear that those 911 tapes, when you put all of that together, I mean, I think it would have had a different feel if Zimmerman had been drug tested, if Zimmerman's gun had been kept. I mean, you know, they didn't do anything that showed they cared about the life of Trayvon Martin. That is where the angst is in the community and now in the world, that they did not show any care and or concern for this young life. That's the difference.
You know, I mentioned this last week about, to me, this means how we look at black image and how we look at black life. And for me, it's almost like it's the tipping point. It's the point of which enough is enough. You know, if you go back in history, I mean, all the way back to Emmett Till, even further back to that one, slavery. And you talk about, you know, most recently, you know, up until Rodney King, you talk about Sean Bell, now you talk about Trayvon Martin. There are countless cases where when we look at this equal protection under the law, it seems like it doesn't apply to black people. And
right.
So that's, for me, that's what's touching home, because it seems like time and time again. So me being a black male, you know, I fit the description regardless of how well I think I've, you know, how educated I think I am, or how well I work in corporate America, how many degrees I have, what kind of car I drive. I still fit the description. Doesn't matter. And
right.
So that's why I was really moved by the Miami Heat putting the hoods on. And if you haven't seen that, you know, just go out to TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. You'll be able to see the actual image, or even out here on blogtalkradio/current events, you'll see the image of the Miami Heat all wearing hoodies, because they too fit the description. You know, they're millionaires, they're famous, but at nighttime they got a hoodie on, they're just the same. You know,
right.
So they too fit the description. So it doesn't matter if you're an African American male, no matter what accomplishments you've attained over the years, you too are a Trayvon Martin. So that's why it resonates. And so along those same lines, it was interesting to me to hear Geraldo give us a lecture on how to be black. And I don't know if you heard this or not, of the, you know, the listeners out there heard this, but Geraldo suggests that it was our attire that really was a part of helpful, I guess I should say, in Trayvon being executed. So I want you to hear what Geraldo had to say, and I want you to get you to respond. Take a listen.
But I am urging the parents of black and Latino youngsters particularly to not let their children go out wearing hoodies. I think the hoodie is as much responsible for Trayvon Martin's death as George Zimmerman was.
Now, how could he say that, Gina, and get away with it?
Well, he was on Fox News for one, so, you know, they say everything on there and get away with it. Facts are not what's important when you're on Fox. Let's just put that out there in the atmosphere. It has nothing to do with what's relevant, has nothing to do with what's real. They live in their own world over there. But the second part of it is that he truly believes it. That's what's so sad about it, that a man like Geraldo himself would come on TV and make such an asinine statement is completely unbelievable to me. And the fact that he thinks he's right. And so, as you mentioned in your opening piece, when you had Bill Maher, okay, so if style of dress is the issue, then how have we lost the Martins and the Malcolms of the world, who they were both gunned down.
And neither
right?
one of them ever wore a hoodie.
Right. The Meggers of the world.
Right, exactly.
They didn't have any hoodies on. What everybody, what all of them have in common, and what they have in common with Trayvon, is they were young and they were black and they were male. And that is the elephant in the room. And so we can make it be about the hoodie. We can make it be about the style of dress, whether or not the pants are sagging, whether or not, you know, what you do when there's a group of young black men hanging around. We can make it be about whatever we want to make it be about. At the end of the day, what he saw first was his color. Because had he really saw anything else about him, he would not have been threatened by Trayvon. There's no way he would have been threatened by him. Now, Trayvon was probably threatened by Zimmerman, by, you know, for sure. But there's no way Zimmerman would have been threatened by Trayvon if he looked past what he thought he saw and what he attached to what the hoodie, which, you know, is supposedly to represent.
I have to agree. We're going to go to the phone lines right now. We're going to take a call from caller last 43732. You're on Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, this is Mr. Motivated in Dallas.
Welcome to the show. You have a comment or a question?
I have a comment. I think with the situation that you're talking about, I think that we have to ask ourselves the question, what if this was me, or what if it was one of my children, so, and it happened in my family? You know, you'd want someone to speak up for you, and I think that's why people are speaking up and speaking out about this, because it's not right. And if we're going to make things get better in this country, we have to stand for what's right and speak out against what's wrong.
You know, I like that, because I believe a number of things associated with that line of thinking is the fact that this resonates with so many people, is because a lot of households has experienced something like this. Maybe not on the scale of getting shot, but definitely on the scale of being misinterpreted or misconstrued for something else, or being put in a category. I mean, not even just black men. Most black people have been in this category. So that's why it's easy, I think, for people to say, I am Trayvon Martin, because they've, in most cases, been in similar situations. What do you think, Jimmy?
I agree with that. And I think the other part of that is that when you sit back, I mean, I think what keeps the fire going in this particular case is that when you sit back and you hear the personal testimonies of people in that city that have been affected by the lack of investigation by the police on several instances of young people being killed and or being assaulted, and we're not talking about in 2012, we're talking about over a significant period of time. And because of that, you have to wonder, was the police incompetent in dealing with this matter, because they've done this before, and the people there. And I think that's what makes it so powerful, is that it's not national people making this an issue. It's the people of Sanford that made this an issue. And they reached out to get some help, but they were at a tipping point, as you stated. They were at a point of no return, because they were tired of their husbands and cousins and nephews and brothers, you know, going out and getting arrested and coming back beaten up, and nobody does anything about it. And so when you're pushed up against a wall, eventually you come out swinging. What we've got to ensure is that we're strategic in how we're swinging back. And I think, the fact that it is a Trayvon Martin who, you know, although they're trying to place him in another light, they've put out some fake pictures and they've said that his face has been lightened so he would appear less threatening. I mean, although they're trying to spin this to be another way, you know, we just have to be smart and we have to be patient and we have to let the process take its course, but we have to, you know, demand justice. And for right now, justice is simply that Zimmerman is arrested. That's the first part. I mean, that's all anybody wants is for him to be arrested.
So what do you think the president weighed in on this week? He made a statement about Trayvon. If he had a son, he would look like Trayvon. What significance does that statement have on this particular case, you think?
Well, I think as with the whole Skip Gates situation, he was asked a question by the press corps. And so he had to make a decision in a split second as to whether or not he was going to answer that particular question or whether or not he was not going to answer it. I found it to be extremely eye-opening that was the only question that was asked after he had just made this big announcement of who the new World Bank president was, that the one question that was asked was about Trayvon Martin. So I have to say that the president, for all whatever people have to say about him, is very strategic. And if nobody else found that to be quite intriguing, you must have missed it, because that was the only question. And so I think him weighing in, and he weighed in on it at the right time. It was a Friday. It was already a slow news day anyway. And he made his announcement. The question came to him. And in his tempered response, I think he gave those of us that support him and wanted to hear something from him what we needed. He gave those of us who knew he couldn't have come out and just made a statement, you know, before now, what they needed. He gave those that were gonna find something against him anyway. So it doesn't matter. He wasn't speaking to them. He was speaking to his core. Just like they say with the Rick Santorums and Newt Gingrich, oh, they're just talking to their base. The president was talking to his base on Friday. That's what he was talking to. And his base heard
it. Yeah, I have to agree with you. Yeah. And so,
you know,
because
what I'm saying?
And
it's all political and it's okay. But when the president talks to his base, then he's creating dissension in America.
Right.
Right.
So. I guess the obvious question for me is that where do we go from here? How do we take this energy and move it forward into something like legislation or to some policy decision that can be made or something that's going to be – there's something that's going to take root in our society so this either won't happen again or will be less likely to happen again? How do we move forward?
Well, like I said, I think the first thing needs to happen, I think, you know, some of those balls are in motion in terms of the grand jury being summoned and the investigation going. There will have to probably eventually be another thorough investigation of the Sanford Police Department. They know there's problems there because this is like what the third police chief in 3 years. He had only been on the job for 10 months, so he hadn't even been there for a year yet, probably wasn't even off probation. And so he was brought in to, quote-unquote, clean up what was happening. And they said that there had been some progress, and then this happened. So, you know, so we're looking for immediate justice in terms of the arrest of Zimmerman, and then let everything else fall the way it falls out. Then the second thing is that you're right. You know, where do we go after this? Do we need to take a look at these stand-your-ground laws? Are there too many loopholes in them where people can say they were being stalked, or they can say they were being threatened, and just because they say they were being threatened, and then it makes it okay for them to turn and shoot and kill, and you know, if they're not, I mean, the fact that the law really doesn't apply because he got out of his vehicle, he had stayed in his car, he wouldn't have had to confront Trayvon, nor would Trayvon have had to confront him. And so, you know, this tragedy could have possibly never happened had he stayed in his car and not followed the young man. And So what does these laws say in these other 29 states that have them? And are there just as many loopholes? So I think at the end of the day, the Justice Department will have to take a look at the laws that are already currently on the books. State of Florida, you know, the Department of Justice will have to do their part on a national level to ensure that these laws are not in some violation of somebody's civil rights or constitutional rights or whatever. And then, you know, hopefully each state would take a look at their own laws for the same purpose. And I would hope that, which I really don't think he will because he's Governor Scott and I think he's kind of on the lunacy side of the party, but that he would really take a look at the commission that he's going to put together to have them take a look at. And when you have, you know, several people who voted against it when it came up for vote back in 04, 07 or something, whenever it was, and those people, you know, were saying we knew this was going to happen, you know, the fact that that law has created more justifiable homicides since it's been into effect, you know. So it probably needs to be taken a look at. I would also say on another scale that what we're missing out on and what we're not paying a whole lot of attention to is the error in judgment of the police department. I mean, you know, I'm no police officer, but, you know, as the commercial says, I play one on TV. And it's just amazing to me that this was how they handled this case. And so how could they get away with it? How can – I'm not just – you know, my concern now is not just about Zimmerman. But I don't think not only the police chief, but I don't think anybody that handled the case that night should still be at work. They should all be suspended now without
pay. Yeah,
that's
a good point.
You know, and that you know, whoever took the first statement, I mean, you have these witnesses stating that they discounted what I had to say. They told me that's not what I heard. I mean, you have witnesses that are telling us, you know, blow by blow what was happening and how the police was responding to them and treating them. I would say those officers don't need to be working right now.
I have to agree with you. We're going to go to the phone lines again. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Press 1 to talk, 2 to listen. We're going to go to last 4, 3127. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Patrick. Hi, Jima. This is Tracy calling from Oklahoma City.
Hey, Tracy.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
I'm so enjoying the discussion. I hit one right when Jima started talking this last time, and my sister pretty much said everything. we have to stay aware of the laws that are being put in at the state level. We have to... You know, right now we're all going through the emotional process and the grieving cycle, but we've got to shift some of our energy to, you know, on the front end, what laws are getting by us that can step on our toes, that can be used to enforce stereotypes. Because I've been thinking all week long about the term you said last week, black image and black life. And, you know, over the course of history, we have literally bent over backwards to meet the expectations and the image and what in some ways are the need of the greater culture. We've tried to talk like you. We've tried to dress like you. We've tried to, you know, imitate in every way. But guess
assimilation.
What? This black skin. The black skin is not going on anywhere.
That's right.
We can't change that. That's not going away. And what excites me so about the coming generation is, you know, these kids are learn. They do themselves. They really do. And, you know, far be it for me as a parent of black young men to say, don't do you. Because to me that robs the greater culture of their talents and of their gifts that, you know, that you can't take away. So, you know, like you said, Patrick, I love what I saw from the Miami Heat. That says,
yes.
You know, I am, you know, I took my dog for a walk yesterday, and I put on a hoodie, and it took on a different meaning.
Yeah, it did. Yeah,
that's
right.
Okay, you know, every time I put on a hoodie, I'm not going to stop buying hoodies. I'm not going to stop letting my kids wear hoodies. When you said you had a comment from Geraldo Rivera, I was like, I probably don't need to hear this. You know, because it's going to be stupid. But how much more do we bend, or how much more do we try to change and be something that we're not? These kids deserve free expression. They deserve to wear. Heck, we influence the daggum styles and trends as it is.
That's right.
You know, in the last 20-some-odd years, hip-hop has, that's what changed the game. Because
white kids
started buying it. They started dressing like that. They started talking like that. But, you know, we still deserve equal protection under the law. We still need to see an arrest happen. Mm-hmm. This man should not be still shopping for his own groceries. He should not be going to the mall. He should not go to work. He should not go to the movies. He should not be walking around free, you know, because of the gross negligence of the police department. I'm with Jima. Everybody that was at work that day need to go home for a little bit and eventually lose your job.
Yeah.
You know? I'm in the business of child care. If I get so beat up, if I get so depressed, if I get so bitter that I no longer care for children, then I need to look for something else to do.
That's right.
Simple as that. If you're in law enforcement and you can't enforce the law, then you need to take it. You need to move around. You need to do something else. But that's all. I want us to stay aware. I want us to stay passionate. I want us to stay on top of, you know, the laws that, you know, if somebody doesn't pick up a lost cell phone and hit mom, then we need to be moving on that. We need to enforce the law, you know, and we need to stay on top of our laws that we're letting get by us. And that's it.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Thank you
for that comment. So, Jim, I wanted to kind of put a pin there for a second and talk about a few things that Tracy mentioned. One, and I'm summarizing here, but all politics is local. And so it seems to me that as a culture, we need to make sure we are in on the front of these laws, especially the local laws, as opposed to just being in national politics, just selecting a president. Because the reality is everything that affects our day-to-day life is really in local politics, not necessarily always in national politics. What do you think about it?
Well, and here's the problem with that. And you know, people, you can say what you want to say about Reverend Al Sharpton, you can say what you want to say about Reverend Jesse Jackson. But I tell you what, those men have been on the front lines being soldiers on the battlefield for a long time. And when you still have, when Jesse Jackson says, on national radio that we have close to 8 million people of color not registered to vote. Therein lies your problem. You have 500,000 not registered in the city of Chicago, black, not registered. Almost 800,000 not registered in Georgia. So we want to know how these laws are getting passed. Well, we ain't out voting for nothing because we're not registered to vote. So it's secular. It's connected. It's all connected. And we want to play like my vote don't count. And as I stated last week, if it didn't count, they wouldn't be working so hard to suppress it. So if just imagine what kind of impact we could have on society if we pushed our values out there, if we pushed our beliefs at the ballot box and forced people to recognize that we have a strong voice, and you will not continue to place these gun stores in my neighborhood or these liquor stores in my neighborhood. You will not continue because I'm going to vote you out.
Because yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. I'm 8 million plus strong now all over again. You know, it's 8 million more of me because we've gone out and we've registered. That's how you impact it. You register and you go vote, just like you stated. It's in your local, your city council. You need to know what zoning are they allowing to happen in your city that keeps allowing the liquor stores and the gun stores to be placed in your city? Because you can go outside any urban city, and it's a whole nother world. You got to drive a minute to find a liquor store. But you in the hood, it's one on every other block.
Literally.
Literally. Are you finding where you can buy, or you have access to it on every other block, whether it's a little convenience store where don't nobody in there speak English but you? So how is it that all of that is going on in your community? Because you're not registered and you're not voting. That's why. So until we go, until we take back the ballot box, until we take back the right that we do have to vote, unfortunately, there will be laws on the books that will allow the Zimmermans of the world to kill little black innocent boys like the Trayvon Martins of the world, because we're not doing our due diligence.
That's right.
Because there's no way. And I'm sitting here in the state of Texas trying to figure out, well, when was that law voted on? Because I ain't seen that one since I've been here voting. But I'm
right.
trying to make sure I wasn't, you know, complacent in my duties.
Right.
And didn't do my due diligence here. So, you know, I feel pretty good that I wasn't here when it was voted on. But the fact of the matter is it's on the books now. And why are we not rising up about it? You know, we're reactionary and we have fire, and then all of a sudden it dies out. If we allow this to die out, if we allow Trayvon's murder to be in vain, much as we, you know, we talk about, you know, the energy we had with Troy Davis, the energy we had with the Gina Six, and then they do something and then we back away, those people that are in the positions that have the microphones and the bully pulpit, they cannot back down this time. We have got to stay on this thing, as Grandma and them used to say, like white on rice.
So herein lies to me the difference between the civil rights generation and I'm going to say the 21st century generation, or the baby boomers, or should I say the generation Xers and Yers and millennials, because it seems to me that they understood the power of the ballot box. They understood that all politics is local. They understood to be the people that are involved in shaping legislation. But it seems to me that we're so content, or maybe complacent, because of capitalism has allowed us to participate in that particular part of society, that we're making money and not making laws. And so I think the reason that we could be in a situation where this can happen in the next generation of what Trayvon Martin you know, down the road could happen again, because it happened in Emmett Till, now it's happening in Trayvon Martin. It could happen again if we're not involved in the politics at the local community levels and shaping laws, because we're so happy making money. You know, I am driving a Beamer, a Mercedes, and you know, got my Gucci Prada on, you know, doing all these things, and yet touting all of these things that I have and just allowing these laws to shape my life. So I think that's the big difference between the civil rights generation and the generations now. I also want to make another point about what Tracy mentioned about the do-themselves generation, what's happening now with the young people as opposed to what we did. We assimilated big time. And this generation is saying, nope, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to do me, as they say. And so I want to know from you, Gina, what do you think about parents now trying to kind of help coach this generation in how to behave, how to present themselves, you know, with authority, things of that nature, and they're pushed back and saying, nope, I'm just going to do me. Is there a danger there?
Well, I think you have to be careful, you know, in terms of, you know, what that means. I mean, what you don't want to do is stifle creativity and individuality, because we're not robots. We're not the Manchurian candidates running around. You know, we are individuals, and we all have our own way of how we do, think, feel, and believe. And so you have to provide an environment that allows them to do that, but at the same time, you have to remind them that you are part of a larger society, and that when you go out into that larger society, I'm not telling you not to be you. I'm telling you to be you and make sure you come home. I'm telling you, it's okay to do what you're doing, but recognize everybody's not going to understand that. And so you get to a point, though, where you say either they understand me or they don't. I get that. because I'm 43, about to be 44, and I'm like, for real, you know, my hair is natural, and I'm going to be natural. And if I choose to, you know, flat iron it, I will, but I'm walking around with my fro right now. And I really want you not to do something for me because I have a fro. Because, see, then I'm going to get you. But, see, if you mm-hmm. don't know that you have that to stand on, then you just walking around with a fro for no reason, or you just walking around sagging for no reason. What is it connected to for you? What does that do for you? Your individuality and your creativity should do something for you. It's not just because. Why do you want to do that? And I think that's what's sometimes missing, is that when you ask kids why they doing what they doing, they don't have a clue. And I want to go back to another point that you made a second ago about the connection or the disconnect between the civil rights movement and now. This, you know, this generation has never not had something. I don't know if I'm saying that right. But they've never not been able to do what they wanted to do. They've never not been able to go where they wanted to go. So they don't quite understand the bloodshed. They don't quite understand the need for black history and the need to be told about the struggle, because they came into a world where it appeared to be all was equal. So when these things are thrown at them, they really don't know how to approach it, because they don't think it's supposed to still be happening. I really believe that some of them don't think it was that bad. I really think some of them, because I can talk to some of my people in my own family, and you would think I was talking to someone from a foreign country, land, outer space, with some of the responses I get, where they like, Wayne J, it really ain't that, you know, they minimize it. They've done, and they've allowed themselves to buy into the notion that it wasn't that bad. So what, we was on the back of the bus. At least you was on the bus. Seriously?
Right.
But why couldn't I be on the front?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe wasn't no seats at the front. No, there were seats, but I couldn't sit there. So I had to stand in the back. I mean, I've actually had conversations like that. So because they've never really truly been denied anything, they don't understand it. It's hard for them to make a connection. If we fail to keep it topical, to keep it where, you know, in our families, then we are losing a part of who we are. We're losing a part of what we have fought for and what people have died for. And we don't have to go back. I mean, when you look at how we got here, and that's, I'm not saying who owned slaves and who didn't, but you look at the journey from where we were brought from to how we, to those that made it through and the ones that just said, I'm not doing it. You know, everybody that didn't make it did not make it because they just died. Some of them just jumped over and said, forget this. Their resolve was that strong. Do we have the same resolve to jump in and say, I will take a stand on this matter? And you do that resolve when you register.
Uh-huh.
And you've got to exercise that right on so many levels.
Definitely understand. So I wanted to take a quick break real quick, and we're going to keep the conversation going. And I want to kind of follow up to something you're saying, Jimmy, about this generation. Because when we return from the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about this generation and a wake-up call for a ninth grader, somebody of this generation, that has been told by a teacher to read what he was reading blacker.
Oh.
That's right. Read it blacker.
My Lord.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, I'm going to tell you all about it, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club
or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Boone friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, be sure to click the like button, click the follow button. You also can follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I also want to mention that TaylorMade, in conjunction with Faith Missionary Baptist Church, is getting ready for our annual, our second annual Hunger Free Summer Program. Now, this is a program where we actually feed young children in pre-K, primary. We have two primary courses, one and two. And then we also provide secondary education over the summertime. And they come in, they breakfast in the morning, we give them a little, you know, for the preschoolers, we have them try to read. We teach them sight words. For the primary kids, we're teaching them, more science, math, some STEM education, and we're doing life skills for them all. And so it's a very exciting, fulfilling program for us, and we really enjoy doing it. And we're asking for your support, and there's three ways you can do that. Of course, you can go out to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free to make a donation. Now, if you you can also go out there and register to volunteer. And we need volunteers, teachers. We need volunteer kind of helpers that kind of help facilitate what we're doing. There's a lot of kids that came in throughout the year to kind of manage that environment. We could just use your help in that area. If you're a male out there, just to be on the campus and to have a male presence, in a lot of cases there are always women involved in educating our children. We want men to be prevalent and to be present in their lives as well. So if you can be there to help participate as well. And if none of those can fit your schedule or time or finances, we ask that you go out to our blog, TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's T-A-I. LORMADE talkradio.blogspot.com. We ask that you click the like button on our Facebook page out there And because what we do with that, we take that to our corporate sponsors and tell them all the people that are supporting what we're doing, and we can potentially get sponsorship from them as well, because they know we have a following, they know people like what we're doing, and they know we have supporters. So if you can't do either of those two, we ask that you go out there and click the like button. Let us know that you like what we're doing and support what we're doing, so we can continue to provide these services free to the kids, I must mention. Free to the kids all summer long. And so we really need your support for that. Now, I want to shift the conversation a little bit, but I want to kind of continue the same thread of topics around what's happening to our African-American young men. Now, this happened in Virginia. Virginia ninth grader Jordan Shoemate says that during class this month, he was reading aloud a poem by acclaimed African-American writer Langston Hughes. When his teacher interrupted and directed him to read in a blacker style. I'm going to say that again, but just in case the communication was broken when I said that. A Virginia ninth grader, Jordan Shoemate, says that during class this month, he was reading aloud a poem by acclaimed African-American writer Langston Hughes. When his teacher interrupted him and directed him to read it in a blacker style. Now, when he didn't comply, she demonstrated for him. And when he asked her why she thought all black people spoke that way, Shumi says he was reprimanded and speaking out of turn. Now, this is a report in TheRoot.com, and his mother said, told TheRoot on Thursday that while the investigation into the incident has not yet been completed, she's hopeful about a resolution and is not attached to any particular outcome, so long as it includes an acknowledgement that the event took place and an apology from the teacher. As long as the process is thoughtful and that they look at all the facts, acknowledge that my son told the truth, in the future implement some racial sensitivity training, I will feel comfortable, she said. Now, what about Jordan himself? He's doing well and staying focused and has the support of his friends, his mom reports. He just wanted to express himself and have it be known that he told the truth, Paige said, adding that her son most likely wouldn't be comfortable being taught again by the teacher who made the remarks. The most important outcome of the national attention given to this incident, in her view, is that other students who find themselves in situations like Jordan's and are singled out for their race feel empowered to speak up. I have no idea why over the past 3 months we've had incidents of a teacher teaching a young elementary school students math by using them to count slaves. Then we had a teacher teaching elementary students how to play a slave game by chasing slaves. And now we have a teacher in Virginia saying, read it blacker, and then gives an example. Jima, what in the world is going on with these teachers who's having an enormous amount of influence over our children? What are they doing?
Well, when you look at the fact that this entire political season, from the Republican standpoint, those that have been running for office, and some of the, you go back to even before President Obama was elected, all of the language and hostility and anger and just nastiness that was said about, you know, as they were talking about the president, but in fact they were talking about you and me as well, because some of those things had never been said about any other person that had been running for office except until he decided to run. And even when Jesse ran and when Al Sharpton ran, they never were met with such venom as what you saw here on such a grand scale. I'm not saying that it didn't happen, but I think once he secured the nomination, people just, like, lost their minds. And so you have that going on in the political discourse every single day. You have Fox News on continuous rotation making up stuff about people every single day. You have your people running that now want to make slavery have been a great thing and African-American families were better off. You have, oh, we don't have to worry about that because we now have a black president, so black people's lives are fine. You have the black people are on food stamps more than anybody else, and we all know that's not true. You have the statements making that the most dangerous place for a black child is in a black woman's womb, and who was highly offended by that was me, because no, the most dangerous place for a black child is in America, as we can see with what's happening with Trayvon and all the other nameless people that have been killed unnecessarily. And so you have all of that going on in the world right now, and it's all just a culmination of what you hear every day, what's being, you know, spewed out on the airwaves. And so what would make a teacher who's supposed to be there to teach tell a student to read something blacker? Exactly what does that mean? What does reading blacker mean to the only black child in your class? What does that mean? And then how am I supposed to be comfortable in your class again to learn, to feel like you're not going to single me out and embarrass me and that you're not going to make me feel less than or unworthy? How am I supposed to maintain that? But see, this just goes back to what we said earlier and even something, you know, that Roland Martin said on his show today and what Tracy was saying. We have overdone it to be accommodating. And if, you know, for me, her taking some diversity classes wouldn't be enough. She needs to go back to school because obviously she missed something on what it means to be an educator.
And certifications
need to be taken. I mean, I don't know, right. but just going, I mean, and I understand the mother probably don't want to make it a big deal, but that's a big deal. I wish my teacher would tell my child to read black. I wish that would happen to mine, because you would hear about it everywhere, because the whole district is going down.
Right. So what's interesting to me, though, is that we don't know how many other students
right.
that have been treated in this manner that hasn't said a word. Because obviously this is a curriculum. Langston Hughes is a part of every English, you know, well, not every, but in a lot of cases. Every kind of literary curriculum, so it would be safe to assume that she's had this particular class at least mm-hmm. more than once.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so if she is expecting for an African American to read it in such a way, mm-hmm. then where is that expectation coming from? I.e.
right.
past history, right? Somebody else has read right. it and read it in a way that she was unfamiliar with. So when he reads it, it was not something she was familiar with. Then she tried to correct him.
Right.
So therefore, it is safe to assume that this has happened in the past.
It's safe to assume that with all these other instances, that these teachers were too comfortable in saying what they were saying.
Absolutely.
And primarily because
That's
no one called them out on it.
That's
Just
right.
like, I mean, it's all kind of connected. We know Trayvon isn't the first young black male to be killed in America this year.
That's
we
right.
know that. But you get to a point where you're like, I'm going to be the one to stand up and say something. So, you know, you've had another child that this teacher probably said something to or something similar, right? And that child goes home and says something, and the parent might be like, well, don't worry about it. You know, just hold it together. Just get through this year. You know, it's a good school. I worked hard to get you. I mean, you know, they probably put all that on the kid, you know. And so the kid, when it happens again to that, probably that very same kid, he won't say nothing because he's kind of like, well, I don't want to, you know, upset my mom, my dad. You know, they really want me to do well here. And so they just take it. You know, they take that lash, you know. And every time one of our kids are demeaned and humiliated in class, it's a lash for me. It's a lash across the back. And every time it happens, it hurts. It stings. Because that's the place everybody should be on equal footing in that classroom, because you as a teacher should try to get us all there. That's the one thing you're supposed to do. And if you're failing to do that, then that's not where you should be anymore.
And the kids are in a vulnerable state because they're saying, I'm in a safe environment. You know, we are all
right.
We're all equal here. There's nobody, you know, better. We're in the same grade level. We, you know, we all should have some commonality. You know, I'm safe. I feel important. And now I have this person, a figure of authority over me to demean who I am, my character, my language, my culture, my ethnicity by saying, define yourself in a way that I see you, not in a way that you see yourself. Tracy said it best. This generation says, no, I'm going to do me. And so, but this teacher tried to say, no, I want you to do you the way that I want you to do. And so this is where the system breaks down when we can have these teachers go out and try to shape these kids' mind and to make them behave in a certain way by these type of incidents. And so what I want to say is, the question I want to pose is, does America have an addiction? Now, addiction is defined by Wikipedia as the continued use of a mood-altering substance or behavior despite adverse consequences. This can include, but is not limited to, alcohol abuse, drug abuse, exercise abuse, and gambling. Some defining characteristics of addiction include impaired control over substances or impaired control over behavior, preoccupation with behavior, continued use despite consequences, and denial. It seems to me that we have an addiction and we need some help.
That's an understatement.
So how do we get past this racial addiction that we have, Jima?
Well, as in all addictions, what has to happen first is that you have to admit you have a problem. And since we have never admitted that we have a problem, then we would never do anything to fix it. It's as simple as that. So we have a problem in pockets. We have a problem in certain situations and instances. But and I think that's what makes Trayvon's case so special, is that he was not from an impoverished background. So pay attention to that. And we can play with that and act like it doesn't mean anything, but it means something. It means something that you have photos of him on TV at skiing. You know, that means something. It means something that his parents can stand on television and articulate with clarity how they feel and not show any sense of, you know, they're not lashing out at anybody, but their anger, even their anger is tempered. They want justice, and this is what they want to see happen. And they can articulate very well what that means to them, both of them. And so that is saying something. And I think because that's the picture that we have is the reason why there's so much outrage about it. Might, you know, we know it is because he was black. We know it's because this person had a moment, maybe he just broke down. Maybe he had a Sarah Palin moment and just broke down. You know, you have those. He had a mini breakdown at night, and he just, you know, that's just how he responded. But when you look at the totality of his history and the amount of times he's called the police and the amount of times people that he's followed have been people of color, you have to wonder if he just has a problem with black people. So if he never admits it, he's never going to get any help for it. So if America thinks that slavery, as stated in the document signed by several of those people that were running for president, wasn't that bad and that black children were better off in slavery, then they're not going to admit that there's been psychological effects lingering for years because of it, because they don't think it was that bad. If they don't feel that the separate, you know, that separate but equal wasn't that bad, then they're not caring what's happening in your education system, because it wasn't that bad in the beginning. The law shouldn't have never happened. So it's okay if your school is crumbling and your books are 20 years old. That's okay. because, you know, you are not worthy to really receive a good education anyway. So no, I'm not going to admit that that's a problem. So it's across the board in everything. And so until there's an admission of a problem, then it's difficult to take the first step to heal, because you haven't even said that there's something wrong with me.
So
if
herein,
and you can tell me 1,200 times a day, Jima, you got something on your face that you need to go get checked out. I could see that on my face and be like, oh, it's okay. Everybody in my family got that on their face. You know
what
I'm saying?
Put makeup on it, right. Yeah.
Right. Everybody, oh, that's just on my face. It's nothing. You
put
know,
a scarf
somebody,
over it. Yeah.
Right. Well, didn't somebody die that had that on their face? Yeah, but that ain't the reason why they died. How do you know that ain't the reason why they died? I mean, you know, we keep coming up with stuff and we don't admit this thing on my face is a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
That's simple, but, you know, I want people to understand what we're saying.
So herein lies herein lies the problem that we're faced with. And so with to me, sets the stage for this happening again and again and again and again and again. Because we keep worrying about, you know, the symptoms as opposed to the root cause of the problem. And so we keep treating the symptoms. We're going to appease the Trayvon Martin family. I'm going to tell you within the next 30 days, they're going to have some arrest and they're going to have some appeasement for this family. They're going to, you know, and so, but they're not going to address their problem. And you're going to hear more people talk about this national conversation. The national conversation needs to start with a mission of guilt, a mission that there's a problem first. Then a national conversation can take place. But if we start talking about having these pockets of national conversations and we need to discuss race, that to me does nothing. That's just like the example you use. We talk about the issue on your face and we just keep talking about it, but we never made an admission that there's a problem. Then we had the conversation takes the right context as opposed to just having a conversation. The conversation about what? In what context are you having the conversation? So
Right. Again,
herein lies the problem, and here's why I truly believe that we have an addiction in America with respect to race, and these incidents with respect to Trayvon Martin, Sean Bell, Jenna Six, Emmett Till will continue to happen. And in fact, I can predict within the next 90 days some similar situation will happen, and it will be it won't be as much of an outrage because we can get to the point where we're now, you know, numb. Because it's happening so much.
Right.
So until we have an admission collectively as Americans that we have a racial problem by whites, black, Latinos, Native Americans alike, we will never move this issue forward. Your thoughts?
Well, and I agree with you. I agree with you on that. And I think the other thing is that, you know, on a small scale or maybe even a large scale, we've become so desensitized to murder. I mean, just last weekend, we were talking about I think it was like 7 people that had gotten killed in Chicago, and one of them was a 6-year-old girl. And yet, where was the outrage for her? And she was innocent. She didn't do anything, you know. She had nothing to do with whatever the issue was between, you know, the families. You know, we've sat back in our community and we've watched gang violence go to a level that is unbelievable. And yet when the leaders of the community try to go out and march against and rally against the drug and the drug dealers in the community and or the gun stores in the community, then they're met with all sort of backlash. You know, it's like, we need those guns, but you don't need all of them and you don't need that type. So, you know, what is that all about? And so we can't really fault a lot of outside people. We have to place, you know, a particular amount of blame of this on ourselves because we've allowed our own selves to be bamboozled and hoodwinked. And so because of that, we have the drive-bys that go on. I mean, we still don't know who killed Biggie and Tupac.
Right.
I mean, you know, for real. On the strip in Vegas, and we don't know who did it. I mean,
more,
seriously.
More important, we're probably not even investigating it.
Right. You know, I'm just saying, you know.
Black image, black life. I'm telling you, that's the
issue. Right. There's a culture that we have perpetuated that was not perpetuated by anybody else, that we perpetuated around violence, around gangs, and around that thug life mentality, and how we have devalued our black life because we take it every day. I guarantee you, I mean, I think it was New Orleans who was at the beginning of the year was well on its way to breaking its own record. Same with Chicago, same with Detroit. And then I heard somebody say, well, you know, we really didn't have a winter. So the people didn't have time to cool off before it got hot again. Are you serious? Really? That's your answer to that baby that's 6 years old that's dead, is that the city didn't really cool off from the winter and it's just already hot already? And so we buy into that nonsense, and then we repeat it like it makes sense. And so we say because of the weather and it got hot faster, same thing in Kansas City. We said, well, you know, we really didn't have a winter, and you got folks killing each other every day on the block.
Right,
and
right.
Yet we want to yell and jump and scream when somebody comes in and kills that don't look like you, but I want you to yell and scream when a person look like you. I want you to be able to go down to the police and tell them that Pookie did that. I want you to say that. I want you to stand and be able to stand with some conviction for the victim, because they're all victims.
Yeah.
But
so
if we don't stop it at the core, that means we. I mean, it's just so much. I mean, this is just Trayvon has just opened up a floodgates of things for me when you're talking about what's happening in the community. And what's happening in the community is we don't care about the community. That's what's happening.
So what can we do? Well, I mean, what's the solution? I mean, we talked about a lot of issues here. And I'm going to go back to the addiction that we have in America. We talked about the fact that we really don't feel as a collective body that there's equal protection under the law. We understand that all politics is local. We understand that this generation thinks differently from the generation that preceded them. So what are some of the solutions? How can we start, if we started today, after at 6 o'clock, when this show ends in Central Time, if we wanted to start somewhere, where would that be? So I would think, and I think I lost Jima there for a second, you know, I would think we would begin. And then one of my colleagues, Leo Baron Hicks, and I, we talk a lot about these type of issues, and he seems to suggest that we should try a quarantine style approach. Let me explain to you what that means. So he's saying this generation is gone. We should take them and put them somewhere and say, okay, we write them off. And when you write that generation off, you say, I am no longer going to worry about you, your behavior, your attitudes, and what you do. I'm going to now shift my attention to the generation that's coming behind you. I'm going to throw all of my resources in that direction. I'm going to make sure that they're well-educated, that they have life skills, that they have a backup plan. And I'm no longer going to spend another red dime on you. So this generation that he's considered to be a lost generation, not everyone, of course, but the ones that fit that particular model, he says throw them away. What do you think about that? 323-580-5712. 323-580-5712. In our conversation about solutions, he seemed to suggest that we should just get rid of them, that generation. And so, Jima, we have Jima back on the line. Jima, what are your thoughts about that?
No, I missed a piece of that. Who said we should just get rid of
them? So, you know, my good friend Leo Baron Hicks and I always have a good conversation about this particular issue that you mentioned. And so I was asking about solutions, right? How do we, what are the things that we do to move the culture forward? And he seems to suggest that we should try a quarantine approach, which means that if a person is diseased and you know that they have this disease and it's incurable, then you take them and you put them and you isolate them.
Mm-hmm.
And you put them and says, look, we can't do anything for them. And you take the generations or the new people, or in this particular example, and you focus your attention on them. You no longer apply any resources to them because they're a lost cause. You no longer focus any education, any monetary, any food, any kind of resources that will help them grow in a particular area. You say, well, I'm not gonna deal with you because you have decided for yourself that you don't want to be a part of moving this culture forward. So we're going to write you off, basically. And so my question to you is, what do you think about that approach in the context of this conversation of we should take some ownership, as you mentioned earlier?
Well, that's a difficult one because so many things come up for me when I hear, you know, we can write them off because they've done that in so many legal instances. When you certify a 13-year-old as an adult and then you try them as an adult and then you place them in prison for the rest of their life, that's a write-off. And so I don't know if I agree with that in its totality. I think maybe, you know, there has to be some limits around, some parameters around, you know, who gets to go into that write-off category. I think, though, the same problem that's in America in terms of the inability to admit that you have a problem is the same problem in the black community, is to admit that we have a problem. We feel we won't admit that we have a problem either with gang violence and drugs and I mean, you know, when you look at the fact that black women make up the highest percentage of new cases every year of HIV and AIDS, it doesn't make sense. When, you know, we've had a face that looked like ours telling us the dangers of unprotected sex. We've had that face. So it hasn't been anybody else's face. There's no other more recognizable face when you talk about AIDS and HIV than Magic Johnson. And he has, you know, said in our faces, you know, what it is we need to do. And yet, for some reason, we still act like it's not a problem in our community. And so because of that, we women of color, black women, every year has the highest rate. How is that possible in 2012 that we're still the highest group? That doesn't make sense to me. You know why? Because we haven't admitted that it's a problem. We haven't admitted that we're just out, you know, being promiscuous. And it's not just you might not be being promiscuous, but you're having unprotected sex with somebody who's obviously having sex with somebody else. You know, and so how is it that's still the case? How is it that's still possible? And then, so until we, across the board in the community, admit that we have these types of problems, that we have allowed, you know, the illegal things to happen in our homes because of what we allow our children to bring into our homes. You know, we've allowed the flat screens and the Gucci's and the Prada's to come into our home. So now then, how can I reprimand when, you know, Pookie is taking care of the house? So I don't. I turn a blind eye. I turn a deaf ear. I don't really say nothing, you know, because I still go to work every day. Then I'm not the bad person. Well, but you're allowing that stuff to happen. And so all of that, you know, and we have yet to say these things are major issues. And anytime somebody tries to bring them up, even back when the president was running and he spoke somewhere on Father's Day and what he said about fathers, and everything he said was true. Everything he said was true. I am, you know too many girls and boys who were not raised by their father. So, you know, who didn't even meet him till late in life. I'm a product of that. Who didn't even know who he was until I was 17 years old. And you want to stand up and say that what the president had to say about black men taking care of their children and being a part of their lives, he shouldn't have said it. Well, Bill Cosby said the same thing, and we attacked him like he was wrong. So if we just say it, you know, if I just come to you in the closet and tell you, you know, you shouldn't be in this closet smoking. And yet when I see you out on the street smoking, I don't say nothing to you about your smoking. You're going to think it's okay to smoke because I only say something to you every now and then. So I have to be consistent in the message. And so when that person takes a stand and says to the black community, we've got to do better, then you have the intellectuals of the world who want to stand up and say, how dare you tell us we need to do better? How dare you tell the Black Caucus people or whoever interpreted that, that you were telling them to go take off their bedroom slippers? Well, in my opinion, the daggum Congressional Black Caucus wasn't doing nothing since the president been in office. They hadn't done a whole lot to support his mission, so obviously
right.
they were somewhere chilling.
Right.
So I got the message. Now, you may be offended because I'm telling you, but I'm telling you the truth. And most of the time when we hear the message, and if we're ready to receive it, it's going to hurt. It's just like you go to church, and you feel like some Sundays that everything that preacher's saying is directed to you. And then you want to walk out, why he always up in somebody's business? No, why you ain't doing what you already been told to do, not by the preacher, but by what the word has already convicted you on. So it's the exact same thing. So until we admit that we have a problem in our community, and I would just be okay if we admitted a problem. I ain't saying we got to take them all on at one time. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not saying we
have to tackle all of them. But can we just say this is a problem instead of making up stuff, instead of, you know, every time somebody comes up with one, we find 20 reasons why it's not. So there's a reason why we can't move forward, because we can't commit to stand on task.
We can
commit to stand focused.
You know what's interesting is that Green Beasley in the chat room also agrees with you. I just wanted to let you know that because he's out there, got some great comments. In fact, he said 25% of all Black men in America have been criminalized by Title IV, the child support law. We are in violation due to the failure to remain current in our child support payment and therefore subject to the law. But I want to take this a little further when you talked about we should pick one issue. And so I want to kind of ask you which issue, because it's obvious that we should try to target. We don't want to put the cart before the horse. Right. We want to make sure we're attacking the right issue. And in my mind, I think that it all boils down to Black men being in the family. I think if we started with that and then making sure our Black men had the resources that they needed to raise a family and be part of a family. And that's not just financial resources. I'm talking about psychological resources. I'm talking about physical resources. I'm talking about economic resources, spiritual resources. I mean, when you look at a Maslow hierarchy of needs, all of those things to support that Black man. And I think that would be step one. And if we begin with that, I believe those other issues would begin to fall in place. Because now the reality is, if a man is not doing his job, putting him back in the home or forcing him back in the home is not going to help that situation. So because he needs to be doing the right thing anyway. But it's interesting to me is that when we look at how to actually select the right issue to tackle, which issue do you think is the issue number one?
Well, because they're so interconnected, that is why I think the role that our leading civil rights organizations have taken is the starting point, because each one of them focuses on something specific, as we stated. So you have the NAACP that's really, you know, pushing things around some of the legal issues that we have to face. You have the National Urban League that's on the jobs front and the economic stuff. You have the National Action Network that is on the education front. And so when you look at that, because all of those things, because if a child is taught correctly and learns and is in an environment that is safe, then chances are they will grow up to be a productive citizen that gives back to the community as opposed to taking away from. And so if we start at the core, you know, in terms of our education system and how, you know, you find the thing that touches everything. And what touches everything? I think education touches everything. It touches what you understand about law. It touches what you understand about finding a job and filling out an application, how to read, how to write. So I think education touches everything. So how then do we impact? But see, it's just not that our schools have to be better. We're now saying, parents, you have to be better. What do you say to the generation whose kids and parents are doing the same things together? how do you break that bond? How do you tell the mother your daughter needs you to be her mother and not her friend, and encourage her to come to school and to come to parent-teacher conferences and to come to the programs at the school? How do you do that? Because if you're not invested there, then it's probably a potential that your child is not going to be that invested either, and then they don't give to society, they take away. So maybe something in the education realm, because I think it touches everything.
Yeah, you know, so I would push back on that a little bit and go back to the issue I raised about black men. In a lot of cases, if we're talking about the current structure, we would say that the teachers or the parents that are trying to raise these young children, in a lot of cases, I'm not going to take all the responsibility away from them, but in a lot of cases are struggling just to make ends meet. Right. But it is true that they should be setting priorities. Their priorities should be their children. They should be attending and participating in these events, as well as separating parenthood from friendship. I agree with all of those things. But I do believe that if you had a man for that balance to be in the home to help support the family, I think those other things kind of fall in line. And that's just my comment.
Right, and I hear that, but I think also, you know, there has to, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to be responsible for yourself. And it's funny, I was watching this movie last night, and what the man had to say was hard to hear if I was his wife, but it made sense. You know, she wanted to have a baby, and he didn't want to have one. And he said, for one thing, you know, we're not really where I want to be financially. He said, but I really don't know if I'm going to be with you that long.
Wow.
Now, that's hard to hear if I'm married to you.
Right.
That's hard to hear. But on the one hand, he was making some conscious decisions about, I don't want to do this right now because I know we can't really afford this right now. So we have to practice, you know, some measures that's going to keep us from having a child that we're not ready and can't, you know, afford to have. So on the one side of that, you know, I'm not getting pregnant by myself. So for that man who doesn't want to, who's not doing what he needs to do, he can cover up as well to ensure that he doesn't have a whole lot of kids running around here, that somebody's going to want to come after him for child support. See, it's not just that I came after you for child support. You made a conscious decision to lay down with me. I let you lay down with me, and now we got this child, and you don't want to take care of it.
Right.
So
that's why they both should be there.
But I'm not more comfortable than you because my egg couldn't have been fertilized without your sperm.
That's right. And that's why I tend to go back to they should be together raising that child. And it shouldn't be something that we just you know, arbitrarily do. It goes
right
back to what I said earlier about unprotected sex, A. And then B, having a child with somebody and not want to be there to protect, you know, to help raise that child, to me is crazy.
But here's the thing, though, because we know things happen in generations. So if I've never seen a responsible adult male take care of a child, I'm thinking it's okay to do what I'm doing. You see
yep,
what I'm saying?
Yep, absolutely.
Somebody has to tell him, even the, you know, somebody has to tell the young one, I know this is what you've seen me do, but I wasn't right. You know, this isn't the way it's supposed to go. You're really supposed to be with the person or at least have some sort of relationship with them that would be beneficial to the child.
Right.
And so if nobody ever tells him that, then he's not going to respond that way. And vice versa. You don't need to have five kids and five different baby daddies. What does that say about you? I mean, that's the hard conversation that nobody wants to have because we don't want to make nobody feel bad. Really? I think if we were to feel bad about some things that we're seeing in our community, we might put up and go do something. And to go back to our original topic, that is the thing with the Trayvon case, is that we feel bad about it because it shouldn't have happened to this kid. So the feelings and the emotions about it, I think, is also what's fueling some of the activity. Because, you know, we feel it's not just that we're angry, because we've been angry before and done nothing. So it's more than just anger. You know, that's not the only feeling we have. we also, you know, there's some other feelings in there. It might be some guilt. It might be some shame. It might be, you know, some just whatever. But at the end of the day, if we fail on the front end to do some of the things that we've talked about, unfortunately, there would be another Trayvon if it hasn't been one already.
You know, and I was just talking about solutions because we talked about all the different issues, and there were several posed through the discussion you and I were having. But it goes back to, in my mind, to two simple points. We talked about the addiction that America has to race, but you were a little bit more specific in saying to really start with the black people, with our culture,
mm-hmm.
and talk
mm-hmm.
about or admit to ourselves that we of our addiction, and then look at solutions around that. And of course, we talked about different approaches to that. And it seems to me is that anytime we try to move in that direction about solutions, we don't agree on where to start. So herein lies, you know, it's almost like a cyclical problem, right? We start out with this bad behavior, and then we go out and we have an incident, and we raise awareness of it. Then we talk about solutions. Then we get in the room, we have a conversation, and we don't agree, then we're back to, you know, starting all over again. So is it any hope for our culture, or is it the case we will be extinct in the next 100 years?
No, because we've already lasted longer than what they thought, and I believe that was a message that Jamal Bryant spoke on at a Rainbow Push meeting during Black History Month, is that the reason why there's so much animosity because they thought they would have gotten rid of us by now, and we keep staying around, and we stay around, and we not only stay around, but we get better at some things, and we begin to infiltrate some areas that they never thought we would, like Tiger today winning in his golf tournament when all had said he was done, right? But, you know, I can say right now live that Tiger is back, right? So when we branch over into those areas, and now here we have a man of color in the highest office of the land, the most respected position in the world, where everybody looks to the United States and to the president, and we've crossed over into that. So if we can do that, if you can take a man whose background is as diverse as his is, with all the stuff that happened, and out of all of that comes that, surely when you go back to your home community, you can take a look at, make it small in your own house, and then branch out to your family. And when you have, you know, and then we are so critical of everything and everybody. I don't care, you know, what Sharpton does, black people will find something to talk about. I don't care what Jackson does, and Jamal Bryan better be careful because he's going to be next. And you know, you see what happened with Roland. You know, I don't care.
Right, right.
You know, and you see what happens every day with the president and these unrealistic expectations that have never been placed on any other president in the world is now placed on President Obama, and yet you sit on and you say you're not going to go and vote. If you don't vote in the national, just go vote in your local stuff. Because you're going to have to live in your state that's going to have these things that's going to be, you know, that you will be affected by. And that is where the nail hitting the head is for me is we must do a better job of accepting where we are. We want to make like we are so above board. I mean, you know, usually I say this about people who have some real self-esteem issues. They put a lot of energy in what they look like and how they dress. And, you know, mm-hmm. they have all these things about them. But when you get to the core of them, they just as empty as a bag with a hole in it. Because, you know, they've never been able to dress the thing that needed to be dressed the most. And that was how they felt about themselves. And so they spend all this time on the outside. And when you take a look around the community, you know, and I remember when I bought my car 12 years ago now, it was brand new when I bought it with 11 miles on it, you know, I was determined that when I bought a new car, it was going to be in a garage. It wasn't going to be in a carport. That was important to me because I'd never understood how your lifestyle says you want this, But then on the other hand, you're not doing anything to really meet that. And so when you talk about what's going on, it, like you said earlier, it's all secular. All these things are really, really, really connected into, you know, who we are, what we stand for, how we're going to move forward. But we have failed to accept that we have a problem with one another. We still have the light-skinned, dark-skinned issue. And whenever somebody talks about it, I think Bill Duke has a movie coming out or a play or something coming out talking about that, and everybody, well, why he want to bring that up? Because it's still relevant. When Chris Rock did the good hair, talking about our hair and how much how much money is spent on weave, people, why he do that?
Cause and perms,
weave and perms, and now we getting data talking about the perms, you know, what it's doing to your, you know, to your brain cells and your and stuff, and I'm telling people, and they're like, well, I cannot walk around with my hair nappy. Really? Who says that natural is nappy?
Right.
But for some reason, somebody has told us that, and we bought into that. I mean, you know, I know I'm just rambling and going on, but one thing is connected to another is connected to another, and it's when we stop and say, okay, I'm tired of my back hurting and my knee hurting, and so what am I going to do different? Am I going to go out and walk? Am I going to cut back on my salt intake? Am I going to drink more water? I mean, either one of those things is going to probably help me. But if all I spend my time on is, well, which one am I going to do? And I'm doing nothing.
Right.
Then my back and my knee is still going to hurt.
Exactly right, yeah.
So go ahead on and drink some water. Or go ahead on and take a walk. Or, you know, do something. And we're stuck into the do something. Well, we know what the issues are, and we stated this months ago, we don't need another report about nothing at this point. We don't need another report about racism. We don't need another report about the police. We know there's some police officers out there on the force that are excellent, that are dynamic, that come to work and they do their job. But we also know there's some that's getting there to get a check, just like we know there's some teachers there to get a check, just like we know there's some doctors there that's just trying to herd you in like cattle and stack you up because they need all that money coming in. But then you have some that take the time. So it's not all. We're not putting them all in the bucket. But when we see it, we got to call it what it is, and we got to deal with it.
So in light of the Trayvon Martin murder, I should say, in light of this this student going through this atrocity while his teacher telling him to read blacker, in light of Sean Bell, Jenna Six, all of these issues that have kind of burdened us over the last decade, it seems to me that we are still in a paralysis of analysis. It seems to me that we haven't moved the ball forward through policy. We haven't taken the next step to say enough is enough. So it's time now to actually go out and do something, get involved, make a difference, as opposed to just sitting around tweeting, poke on Facebook, making these comments. We need to take some action, because when we wake up in the morning, it won't be Trayvon Martin, it's going to be somebody else, and we're just going to be out there doing the same thing again. Alright, we're approaching the end of our show. Jima, any final comments?
Well, I have to say once again, congratulations to Tiger for winning his tournament today, first win in a while, and I'm glad to see that. I'm hoping KU holds on and beats North Carolina. Right now, KU is up by 7, I believe, at halftime. Yeah, I'm giving my sports piece right now. I'm excited about that. So we're at a point midway through where the spring has started, ramping up and ramping down in terms of the Republican GOP nomination process, which means things will be taking a slightly different turn here probably in the next month or so. The Supreme Court tomorrow, I believe, starts its hearing process on the Affordable Health Care Act, which was signed into law 2 years ago by the president, and we need to be paying attention to what the Supreme Court is doing. Just like we missed when they decided that Citizens United was considered people, and that's why we got all this money flowing into our elections right now, which is probably causing more harm than good. We need to pay attention to what's on the dockets at the Supreme Court. If you have C-SPAN, I encourage you at least once a week to go see what they were talking about in the halls of Congress, because those committee meetings are televised, and we need to see what they up there talking about. You got this, you know, Ryan's plan that's coming out, and the cuts to Medicaid and to Medicare and to seniors and the college students. You know, all of those things for me is personal because my mother is 70 now. I have a brother that should be considered disabled and is not. And so, you know, some of the medical benefits that he's receiving now could potentially go away, you know. And as a woman who prescribes to birth control, I need to know what they finna do with all of that, you know, and how those costs will have a direct impact on my household. And so we need to be aware of these things. And so not only on a national level, but as I stated, please, you know, go to your state's website, see what your state legislators are talking about. What laws are they trying to pass? And what bills are on the floor right now for conversation? Because we keep getting knocked upside the head the same way. And we keep getting knocked upside the head because we're not paying attention. So I just, you know, if you're not registered to vote, please get registered. Take somebody with you to get registered. Make sure those in your immediate family, if you don't take care of nobody else, take care of those in your immediate family and making sure that they get registered to vote.
Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all my listeners for tuning in. A special thank to Green Beasley out there in the chat room doing his thing. Check him out on Blog Talk Radio. Also, Mr. Motivator. Mr. Motivator has a show on TaylorMade Talk Radio every Saturday at 5 p.m. giving you the goods when it comes to all that useful motivation information. Special thanks to Tracy. Thank you for calling in and giving us all that grateful insight. And of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Now, don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima. That's AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." So stay engaged. Stay informed and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. You can always Google me, Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dream. Take us away, Joyce.